Welcome to Blurred Vision Reviews. I'm Greg.
And I'm Parker.
And I'm Mr. Z, joining the review podcast. You could just call me Z if you'd like. That works for me.
That's right. Welcome, your debut on Blurred Vision. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, I have been. Yep. Well, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of fun. Doing something a little different. So I'm looking forward to being on.
I was having a case of the Mondays on a Friday. I asked Greg and Tony if they'd seen a good movie, they should send it my way. And they made me laugh. They seemed to read my mind. I thought, hey, these reviews, they're a pretty good time. Well, it's better than having the blues. It's better than having dog shit on my brand new pair of shoes. And it's better than watching my grandfather while he watches the news. It's Blurred Vision Review.
Perfect. Cool. So today we're going to do a special mid-year summary of the top five movies that we've each seen so far. We did one last year. And then we, at the end of the year, we do top 10 and we kind of see what has moved in, what has moved out, and just kind of see what the landscape of the movies for 2017 is going to be here. So we can just kind of, oh, you want to say something here, Parker?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, look forward to us talking about Xander, XXX, The Return of Xander Cage for the next, 30 minutes or so.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. We're going to break down the physics of, The Return of Xander Cage. That's every single one on my list is that movie. So just different scenes.
Yeah, well, sure.
All right. Let's, do we want to just jump in?
Go for it.
I'll start off. My number five movie of the year so far is Wonder Woman. So this was directed by Patty Jenkins, stars Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. This is the DC movie. I saw this a couple times in the theaters, actually. It was kind of, I didn't expect too much from it. I didn't want to get my hopes up, but I thought it was a well-written, it was a good story. I liked that it was World War One. I thought that was interesting instead of going with World War Two or just modern day times. This was generated huge buzz around. My girlfriend, like I said, when we did the review after the movie, she was doing karate moves in the parking lot. So she was really shocked, and she doesn't like superhero
movies.
Before
or after the movie?
After. She was actually very angry that I was forcing her to go see the movie because she hates superhero movies. And at the end, we're walking to the car, and she's doing karate kicks and stuff. So
nice.
I thought that was a pretty good gauge of how that movie was. And it's still pulling in a decent amount of money in the box office every week. It's still going strong, surprisingly. It's been out for a while.
It's one of the few success box office wise, which is kind of my area of expertise, would be the box office. And it hasn't been a fantastic year. It's been okay, but Wonder Woman is one of the few real success stories in the box office. So yeah, people just keep coming out for it.
So like what has it done like versus against its budget or whatever, that type of stuff?
Oh, well, yeah, it made its money already a long time ago.
Okay.
And that's good because, you know, there's three sources of money that the studios can kind of get. You know, well, if you get your box office, which one thing that might be helpful, one thing that people kind of forget to estimate is that when you're looking at the total box office at a movie like Wonder Woman does, you have to cut about 30 to 40% out of that number because some of that has to be shared with the theaters that are showing the movie.
Sure.
Then you have your second wave when you get out to your what used to be DVD sales, or still some DVD sales, but your streaming on TV direct on demand stuff, and then the third tier when they sell it to either like an HBO or a Netflix. So there's three different revenue streams that come, but they've already made their money back before they've even hit the second stream. So they're ready to make number two. They can't make Wonder Woman 2 fast enough. So.
Okay, no, that's interesting. You don't hear these types of things from Greg and I because we don't know anything about how money works. But so it's good to have that extra perspective. I'll say I also enjoyed Wonder Woman quite a bit, but it did not make my top five.
Yep, I agree. I had it. It was in for my consideration, but it didn't make my list. So
yep, it was. I'd say. Like top.
The second half, the first half of the movie would make my list. If I would have walked out an hour after the movie started, I really enjoyed the first half of the movie. The second half of the movie, I kind of started getting ground down slowly but surely.
Yeah, it kind of fell in that the same cliche of the superhero movies of just
dark. Yeah, giant... yeah. But the first half was cool. I thought that when she's getting trained and I'm drawing a blank on Princess Bride. Beautiful. She's like ageless beauty.
Robin Wright.
Yeah, yeah, I mean she was just perfect in that whole thing, you know. And you know, and then he kind of comes from under that cloud. It's so dark, and then he kind of comes up, and it's that bright, sunny ocean on the one side, and then dark war on the other, and stuff. So yeah, that whole thing, I was all in, you know. And then the end wasn't so. But anyway, neither here nor there. Good movie.
All right, Parker, you want to go with your number five here?
Yes, I will start with number five, and I have a feeling this is going to be on some other lists. But I'm saying for my number five is Baby Driver. So we're looking at starring Ansel Elgort and John Hamm and Jamie Foxx, Kevin Spacey, and then there were some other recognizable faces in the movie. There were some things that I didn't like about this movie, but since we're going to be positive in doing a top five, I'll just talk about the things that I liked. It's the first movie, I think, that I've ever actually noticed like sound production qualities and like sound editing and how important that can be in a movie. Like how several of the action scenes matched up with the music and the I just thought that was absolutely incredible. And so I heard that there was very minimal CGI. In fact, I heard something that there was no CGI used in the driving scenes at all, which is pretty incredible when you see some of those stunts. But a cool musical action film, basically. I was really Baby Driver.
I would agree. I decided to put this list together not like the five Oscar-winning movies or the five movies that everyone, you know, is going to say are the best movies of the year. I just went with the movies that I had the most fun watching.
That's the way to do it.
So Baby Driver, I actually had number four, and I agree. Ooh. That it was, you know, it's a little bit, you know, Kevin Spacey overacting the whole way, that whole bit, but it works. It's, you know, it's supposed to be like that. That's his character, you know? And I agree that the choreography, that was, of course, part of the plot of the movie, but that baby, which some people didn't like the title. I didn't really mind the title.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I think.
But baby, the choreographing, they literally specifically choreographed the music to whatever kind of escape route he would have to take. And that made the movie. It became just a spectacle of music and driving. And I normally don't like car chase movies, but this was a good car chase movie.
Exactly. That's exactly how I felt. I car chase scenes and cars and movies just bore me. And yep. This entire movie, I wanted Baby to get into his car because he was basically a superhero in the car, and the scenes were just insane.
Yep.
It was, yeah. I've seen that a couple of times in theaters too. And I know, Parker, you said you wanted the focus on the positives, but you were one of the people that absolutely hated Baby as a character.
Baby, if I met Baby in real life, he and I wouldn't get along. I just know that he's a hipster douchebag, piece of shit. I would hate everything about him. Every interaction I had with him would be just me wanting to spit in his face. But all the other characters I liked a lot. So that's my by extension, the love story I wasn't into.
I can see that. I felt like I felt like that with John Wick 2 when everyone told me, you know, John Wick 2 was, you know, in fact, some people have John Wick 2 as one of their 10 best movies of the year so far.
You might be breaking somebody's heart as we speak.
Aside from, you know, the first 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, I am totally in. And you know what? Those first 10 minutes were sweet. And then I just hate watched the rest of it.
Oh, man. I'm going to talk more about John Wick.
Yeah, if it's on your list, I better be careful. Yeah,
no,
it might be on your
list. It's much later on my list.
So anyway, but I didn't mean to bring up John Wick to rip, but I was bringing up that I can see that some people, for the same reason, I can understand if somebody didn't like Baby Driver, just as I understand there's some people who loved John Wick. I didn't get it. I mean, that first 10 minutes were brilliant, and then after that, I was just like, I just was waiting for that movie to end. But anyways, neither here nor there. Sorry if Keanu was one of your listeners, apologize.
Yes, he's an avid listener.
I had that four on my list. So.
Excellent, cool. Mr. Z, you want to go into your number five here?
Sure, I can do my number five. And again, I'm a little nervous, but again, I'm going with what I saw and what I liked, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay, nice.
I have number five. There were certainly faults to the movie, in the middle especially, that got dragged out, but I had more fun. I Chris Pratt, he's just one of those actors who you feel like you know him. You know, I feel like, yeah, I know Chris a little bit, you know, because yeah. I've seen his movies and I went there, I got to screen it, and sometimes I get to bring my kid to the screening when I was a kid, and we just had a blast. And so I'm not really sure how to argue that it's a really good movie. I just really had a blast watching it and couldn't wait, because I knew all the characters, they made me laugh, and if Guardians of the Galaxy 3 came out next week, I'd go see it. So
awesome. Yeah, that was the first Guardians was kind of a big surprise for me last year, and I was really
that was a better movie.
Yeah. I totally agree. I was really, really excited for Guardians 2. And that opening scene was just perfect for me, with them fighting that weird weird slimy monster, and then Groot just dancing in the foreground.
Mr. Blue Sky.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It was awesome. I was fully in, but like you said, kind of in the middle, I got a little bored.
Yep. I'm not saying it was great, but again, it's one of those things that in hindsight, I really enjoyed the experience of being at that movie. So.
Yeah, and that mean hell, that's all this is. This is we go to movies to have fun and enjoy it, right? We don't go there. Well, typically we don't go there to hate watch stuff.
No, you go there either to be challenged, like in a Pan's Labyrinth way.
Hell yeah!
Or just to be, which is why I was unfortunate that Valerian I certainly would never argue that Valerian was a good movie, but it did not deserve to do $16 million. It was visually entertaining. I don't get why it didn't. I mean, you know, the pieces of crap that have done $16 million.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of the Transporter 3 open to $16 million, you know, and we can't get, you know, an original, Luc Besson film to do $16 million. But anyway, I digress. We'll move on.
No, I will say Pan's Labyrinth might be my favorite movie. It's definitely in my top 10 for sure.
In the movie snobbery world, we used to kind of talk about how you could kind of tell what kind of person, and not in a good or a bad way, and there's certain movies that you can use to gauge like what kind of person it is, and Pan's Labyrinth is a good one. Like if somebody says, I hated the movie, I just didn't get it, you just kind of go, okay, you know, I gotcha. You know, I know who you are.
I saw Pan's Labyrinth only one time. That was in college. And I hated it.
Really?
Yeah, but...
Well, now I know you better.
Yes, you do. But I will say this. I love basically every other Guillermo del Toro movie, and so I've purchased Pan's Labyrinth, the Criterion Edition, and I'm going to rewatch it because I know I'm a fucking idiot for not liking that movie. It's basically what
it
is.
Well, that depends on when you watch it.
Right,
Good del Toro had some hit and misses. His knew that... The Shape of Water comes out in December.
I just watched the trailer for that today.
Yeah, that's so weird. Some people are kind of trying to say it's a prequel to Hellboy because that might be Abe in the water, but I don't know.
That's what I heard too. I don't know. It's like a weird mix of multiple of his movies, it kind of seems.
But I like that kind of stuff. That looks like a good movie to me.
Yeah, I'll always give Del Toro a chance.
Another one that is a good gauge is Royal Tenenbaums for me.
That was a good one. I haven't seen that one in a long time.
Yeah, that's an older movie. I'm a bit older.
Royal Tenenbaums. The Paul, what's his name?
Wes
Anderson. There we go. I was thinking Paul Anderson from like There Will Be Blood and stuff. But yes, Wes Anderson. I've liked pretty much every Wes Anderson movie that I've seen, I think.
Yeah, it's very charming. Even if the one on the train wasn't a great movie. But there's just something charming about the way he acted. Well, and then he has what's his name that's in a lot of his films?
Wilson or?
Yeah, the other, the...
Luke Wilson, Bill Murray.
Sorry.
Oh, it's fine. We'll move on. That's fine.
It's a guy who also is, he created his own band.
Not the 30 Seconds to Mars, not... No.
Something Coconuts. Driving me crazy.
Oh no. Well, if it ever comes out, just blurt it out. Just blurt it out. And
right.
All right. Should I just do number four? Where are we at?
I'll jump in with my.
I did four too.
Yeah,
so.
And my number four will be easy as well. My number four is Baby Driver as well, so we don't have to talk too much about that. The only thing I will say about Baby Driver that I was listening to another review, and they brought up a thing where their kind of idea was that Baby Driver exists in an alternate universe, because some people have smartphones. Baby has a flip phone. The diner is like an old school's 50, and so they just basically said like, yeah, this is clearly not in modern times. This is its own thing, kind of like It Follows, where you can't really pinpoint what time it is. And after they said that, I was like, huh, you know what? That actually, if that is true, it helps with some of the issues that I had with the movie, like kind of the bizarre inconsistencies. But if that was what they're going for, then cool.
Yeah, those are weird, interesting when those are fun, like theories, like the Pixar theory to follow along, you know, and to when they start kind of breaking down a movie inside the movie. So
yeah, cool. Exactly. Parker, you want to go to, you're the only one left with number four here.
I think, yeah, I'm the only one with my number four still on the board, and my number four is Get Out. And I a lot of nice things have been said about Get Out. First and foremost, the movie was really, really funny at times. I mean, it's written by Jordan Peele from Key and Peele, who were, had the show on Comedy Central forever. And, I mean, the comedy scenes, especially with, the little Ray, is that his name? Little Ray Howard. Dude, that guy may have become a star just from his turn in that movie. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of the social issues and stuff. I'm not going to talk too much about a lot of that part of it because I'm extraordinarily white. But I will say I'm a white I'm a white liberal, and this movie was a critique of white liberals. And, you know, hit home for me.
Sure.
Try to do better. Yep. You know, that's all I can do. But I loved it.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about, I didn't forget about Get Out, but when I was making my list, I didn't put it on my list. But if I had to do it over again, I would have to consider it. So I agree that that's a good number. That's a good, definitely needs to be in the conversation for the top five movies so far.
And I think the thing Parker and I have talked about with Get Out when it first came out is just what its budget was, $4 million. And did it crack the $100 million at the box office? Which is just insane for that type of movie. Which is, it kind of just became its own social phenomena, like for this summer. And my girlfriend and I went and saw it, and it was a packed theater, and people were just living it up, yelling at the screen, like, oh, it was a great experience. And I can't agree more with what Parker said. It's hilarious.
Yep.
It has genuine horror elements in it, which it takes that turn in the third act where where it was just pretty much insane. And like Parker said, it hits on some of the social issues here. So I actually have that as number two. So we're on the same page there.
I forgot about that. I didn't forget about it, but I didn't have my list. So I don't have any problem with that being on there. You have to give it credit for being original. For being able to take a movie, there's another movie I want to talk about later on, but there's not many movies in which you can have a fresh take on, you know, where you can see something that you've never seen before and go, you know, and so that's what I think Get Out did, is it took people by surprise because it was nothing. It was funny, but it was scary and it was creepy and it was weird and it was poignant. And so, yeah, I agree. By the way, it's done 175 million domestic so far.
Oh my God. Holy shit. Wow.
76 mil overseas. So it's at 252 million total right now.
So it's safe to say Jordan Peele will be getting another,
film. He made a lot of money for somebody.
Was it Blumhouse? I think that's who put this out.
Well, Universal distributed it. Yeah. Okay. I don't remember if he made it with Blumhouse or not. I think Universal distributes for them, I believe. So yeah.
And I think it's one of the interesting things about Get Out is, since Jordan Peele had such, everyone knew him just strictly from a comedy background, and then this is his debut as a director, and he picks the horror genre instead of going. I mean, he was in Keanu last year, which, you know, But then for this to be his debut, I think kind of also caught people off guard.
Well, the studio didn't even release it wide at first when they were first coming out. That they put it in all the bigger markets, but they were kind of worried about putting it into the smaller markets because they just think it was going to play. And so people were kind of like, where is this movie? Freaking out because it wasn't playing in the smaller towns. So,
yeah,
but they expanded.
Yeah, no. And I've heard that Peele, he wants to stick in the horror genre. He said that's his genre and that's what he's going to keep doing. So I'm looking forward to what he can produce going forward.
There you go. Well, I mean, you know, if it worked for Tyler Perry with Medea's Boo last year.
Yeah.
And if you can believe, I don't know if you know this yet or not, but he cranked out another one fast enough that Boo 2 comes out this October. So.
No.
No, it's already ready.
Okay, it's already.
You, if you don't know, I don't know if you know how much money that movie did.
No, but, I don't. I will confess, I've never seen a single, I mean, I probably, wasn't Tyler Perry, didn't he have a role in Girl on a Train or,
He's tried to get, well, yeah, yeah, yes, he's as not dressed up as Medea, yes.
Yes, he's had some roles. I've seen him maybe in a few movies as like a second kind of tier guy. I've never seen a Tyler Perry.
No, I can't. The Medea ones. If you're going to, Boo would probably be the one because it's so ridiculous. It did $73 million last year.
Wow. Huh, that's great. They just, yeah, printing money at that point. It's, why not just keep
churning
them out?
Money.
Yeah. Can't blame anyone for that, especially him.
No.
Mr. Z, are we? I think we're on. We're on three now, aren't we?
Yeah, so you.
Oh, yeah, because I did. Baby Driver was my number four.
That's
so.
Right. Okay, cool. I'll just give a little recap here since I can't remember everything. So my number five was Wonder Woman, four Baby Driver. Number three for me is Dunkirk. So Christopher Nolan. With Tom Hardy, is it Fionn Whitehead, Mark Rylance, Cillian Murphy? I just saw
Harry
this.
Harry Styles.
Yes, Harry Styles. Yeah. My girlfriend was, she picked up on that very quickly. I was like, who is that? What? But I saw this at the Minnesota Zoo IMAX. And
nice.
It was Sunday night. It was packed. And yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, you need to go to the zoo. You need to go see that on IMAX. It's loud, it's big, and it's shot with IMAX cameras, which a lot of Nolan movies are now. So he's got specific scenes for it. I knew the story of Dunkirk, but I didn't know a lot of the details of it, and I didn't know what type of movie Nolan was going to deliver for us. And it was, I thought it was awesome. It was tense. My coworker at the end of the movie, I looked over at him and he just stared at me and said, "I didn't blink the whole fucking movie." It was, everything worked perfectly. I love that I was reading up on it a little bit today. Nolan did a lot of research into the silent films and how they used, how they shot their movies, which totally makes sense after seeing this movie because there's minimal dialogue in this movie. It doesn't have a lot of character development as far as just like people talking. It's more of just the actual event and kind of, it could be any single person that they were following and had a crazy story from that day or week. It was unrelenting. Basically you felt like you were drowning or strangling the whole fucking movie, which it was. Yeah. I'm going to have to see this again for sure. And I also read they actually used real destroyers and a lot of the plane scenes were actually shot while flying the planes, which Parker and I always hound on this, less CGI, more practical effects. And one thing I really appreciate about Nolan movies is that usually you walk away and you're always thinking, how the hell did he film that shot? How did he do that hotel room in Inception? You know?
Yeah.
So this was another one where I have to go back and try to figure out what the hell, how he was doing these and how the studio let him do that.
Yeah, I also had Dunkirk as my number three, which I thought was going to be low. I thought I was going to be the get ripped for only having it at number three. But, you know, earlier, a little bit ago, we were talking about how Peele was able to kind of get a fresh, different take and a look for a movie. I kind of was surprised. I'm a little bit of a Nolan. I have a couple of beefs with Nolan.
Sure.
I'm a huge fan of Inception. I was a major fan of Memento. I loved the first Batman. I thought the third Batman was overrated. any movie where the main character talks like this the whole time.
Jokes like this.
I can't stand it. It's like, take off the mask. I can't understand what you're saying. But anyway, neither here nor there. And plus, the other thing is that bugs me a little bit, coming from the defending the theater side of the industry. 90% of the movie, that 90% of the dollars that Warner gets from Christopher Nolan films roll in from movie theaters. Okay, you know, so like when Batman does, you know, $500 million, you know, $450 million of that is rolling into their coffers from good old movie theaters. And then he takes that money that they give him, and then he makes a $200 million film, and then he only wants you to go see it in IMAX, which gives him about 8% of the total dollars. And it's kind of like, dude, you know, if you're going, if you know, so IMAX is a great way to see it, but there's some really nice mega screens around that are, I have a hard time telling the difference between some of the mega screens in the area and the IMAX. And the movie, I saw it in a big giant super screen, and I thought it was great.
Which so I live like South Metro, so I usually go to the Zoo if I'm going to go see a movie that I think is visually stunning. So are there any screens in particular you'd recommend aside from, because the Zoo IMAX is the one I do.
Oh yeah, and I'm not saying you shouldn't see it in IMAX. I was just bringing it up a little bit because Nolan kind of bites the hand that feeds him sometimes, but he's like, well, it's his artistic feeling that he, you know, he wants to do that. It's like, well, yeah, well then use your own money, idiot. You know,
yeah.
If you don't take everyone else's money and then tell them not to go to that theater, then just have some balls and just only show it in IMAX. Then have some courage, you know. And but then that would only do about $11 million for its whole run.
Oh, so. Jesus, yeah.
But I move around a little bit. I am based here in Minnesota. I am familiar with the theater in Plymouth.
Okay.
I don't know if you've been over to that one with they have the all recliners with a giant 70-foot screen or whatever.
Yeah, that's the one I saw SS. Baby Driver in, and that was
did
perfect.
You see it in the big house?
Yeah, it was nice.
That's a sweet house, isn't it?
Yes. That was the first time I've ever been there, and it blew me away. I live in Fridley, which I always say is a dying city.
Yeah, that's a fair drive.
I was like shell shocked of how nice that Plymouth theater was compared to what we have in Fridley.
So yeah, so obviously IMAX is good, but like I said, a screen like that does just as much. But anyway, sorry to go back to Dunkirk. So yes, there's not much else to say. You're right. There's no exposition, which is, I don't know if you told somebody that you're going to make a movie with no exposition. You're going to start the movie with just characters talking and no sense of how they got there. And then you're going to mess around a little bit with the timeline. And I don't mean in a sci-fi way. Obviously you guys know, but the timeline where, you know, the land and the sea and the water kind of being, you know, like having to kind of follow along a little bit. It's like, wow, he managed to make a film that took a fresh take on the war movie, which I wouldn't have thought was possible. So he did a great job. Loved it.
I totally agree. And I think if people that are listening to this haven't seen it yet, they might be a little confused. I know at first I was wondering, because in the very beginning of the movie, they show you, they give you the people on the beach. They say it just shows 1 week, and then they show in the sky. They show 1 hour, and the people on the boats is 1 day. And at first, you know, Nolan movies, there's always a twist, so you're not really sure what's going on. But then it slowly you realize like, oh, that's the story for each, you know, the land, the sea, and the sky. And I thought it was really cool too how a different filmmaker would have made those stories intertwine super obviously. And I didn't think Nolan was too heavy-handed with that. A lot of it was, if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't have realized, oh, that was something that we saw earlier in the movie from a different perspective now.
No, he's brilliant. He's definitely one of the two. Him and Fincher are the two go-to guys that you can almost always go to as making a good movie. So
absolutely,
no matter what Nolan he managed to make a war movie that was really, really cool. So, and yeah, like you said, it's just it's exhausting, almost might be a good way to put it. By the time you're done with it, you're almost tired, you know.
I hate to say this, but I have my tickets purchased at the IMAX. I haven't seen it yet though, and I'm kind of disappointed in myself. But the thing was,
it's not that good.
Oh, it's not that good. Okay, well I just know. It was one of my most anticipated movies of the years, but I went to buy tickets last weekend, and the tickets at this IMAX are $18. So it's like, if I'm not going to get a really good seat, I'll just go to a different showing and get a better seat. So
sure.
That's where I'm at.
No, well, that's good. Well, yeah, I don't think that there was any spoilers in there. Except
no,
for,
no, not at all. Plus, I pretty much know how Dunkirk worked out, so
right.
no spoilers on that front. But all right, yeah. So
it ends with Harry Styles spinning this little top, and then it goes to black, and you don't know whether the top falls over.
Okay, okay, I got you. Yeah. It sounds like it's one of Nolan's things now.
Yeah, that's his thing. Yep.
Yeah, the spin. Okay. All right. For my number three, I've got It Comes at Night.
Cool.
And so yeah, this was a really unusual one. I had no idea what this movie was about. Saw extremely minimal advertising for it beforehand, but you know, I'll go see pretty much any horror movie in the theater because that's my favorite genre.
I sent you a text and said, hey, we're going to review this movie. Just go check this out. And you're like, oh, sure. Yeah, no, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that was just about it. And I went and saw it. And, you know, whatever you think, even because it starts off a little bit intense, like, okay, what's going on here? Some type of zombie or illness or sickness, some type of apocalyptic world ending, you know, end of times type event has taken place. We don't really know what. So in that sense, it's kind of like The Road. But, you know, it's a lot more contained in a smaller area than The Road is. And, you know, as you go through the movie, you just get to see how a community can destroy itself through and how isolation can really damage someone's brain. This is the only like actual serious-ish movie that I put on my list that was actually something where I had to pay much attention to what was going on. But I really enjoyed It Comes at Night.
Yeah, I mean, it was I didn't in my job. Sometimes I don't see whole movies. Sometimes I see half movies.
Sure.
when they're more limited. And so I can't comment too much on it. I do know I thought it was going to be a little more. And this is my fault. For some reason, I went into it thinking it was going to be a little more like fast-paced, and I wasn't prepared for kind of the really slow burn that it had.
The trailer released made it look like just a straightforward horror movie.
Yeah,
which I think
and it's almost like a social, account on whether we can kind of who we can trust and what happens when you start not trusting the people around you and all that stuff. So, but yes, it was obviously it critically just very well loved. So.
Yeah, and I have this on my list later on, I was blown away by this movie. I didn't really, like Parker said, I have no idea going into the movie. I didn't want to see anything, didn't want to read anything, and I saw the movie almost right before it left theaters, and so I was the only person in the theater, which was awesome for a movie like this where it just kind of adds to that eerie, creepy feeling, and it was, it just blew me away. I read a review where because It Comes at Night makes it sound like there is an actual monster or there is an actual creature out there, but right. Really the thing it deals a lot with grief, and because it starts off with a death of a family member and kind of the repercussions of how that's handled throughout the rest of the movie, and so it was, and we see that with some dream sequences, and so it was really interesting. I mean, and the cinematography in this movie was insane. The way they shoot down the halls and they just, everything is perfectly set up just to make you feel uneasy and creepy. And it was one where I left the theater and I had no clue if I liked the movie or not. I was like, what the hell? And as I just kept thinking about it, I was like, yeah, I think I like that. It was kind of the same reaction I had with The Witch from last year, where I had no clue what I just saw. I had to sleep on it, think about it, and realize like that was a really good movie.
Yeah, those are the best. Sometimes the farther away you get from it, the more you realize that you liked it. Or what happens if you see a trailer for it and you're like, oh man, and it kind of reminds you how much you like that.
Yes, movie. Exactly. Yep. Mr. Cool. Z, I think we're on. We're on three for you.
My three. Yeah, I talked about my three was Dunkirk. So.
Oh. Geez, we're all thinking in the same way here. Well, this will be easy. My number two is Get Out. So we won't tackle that too much other than, I just can't wait to, I've seen this twice already and I am ready for a third viewing.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it and you're listening to this, go fucking watch this movie.
Yeah, it's easy. It's an easy recommend if you for people. There's a couple. I'll wait till the end. There's a couple movies like that that aren't on my list. Get Out and Logan is another one that's a kind of easy recommend. That's probably not in anyone's top five here, but you can kind of pretty much tell people that they'll like Logan.
Exactly.
You know, if
yeah.
you like that kind of movie. Yep. So.
And at the end, we can go through some honorable mentions, I guess, too. Sure. I know I had a list of like 13 movies that I had considered for my top five. I thought this was so far a pretty strong first half for 2016. Yep. I thought was kind of shitty. At least I was struggling to come up with a top five last year. And this one, it was the opposite effect. Parker, you want to just move on to your number two?
Yeah, so I okay, so my number two, I just mixed with my number one because I actually couldn't make, I couldn't really make the choice there.
Tough shit. Make a big boy decision here, Parker.
Oh, shit. Okay, fine. Okay, for number two, I'm going to go Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast was fucking magical. I'm serious. Like, there was one scene in the movie, the Be Our Guest scene. Be Our Guest. Blah, blah, blah. Everything in that scene was pure cinema magic. It reminded me of like why people wanted to like go and be amazed by things and like go to movies, and you just see something that's so incredible, and the music is with it, and the dance scene is with it, and the visuals are just perfect. And that wasn't the only time that that happened in that movie for me. The Gaston sequence, pretty much. I know I've already kind of made this complaint that I hated Baby and Baby Driver, but by far the worst two parts of this movie were Beauty and the Beast. Like, Emma Watson, is that? Yeah, Emma Watson can't sing, and the Beast, they used way, the CGI I don't think was very good on the Beast's face. I thought he did a great job other than that, but his face just didn't look that great, but... Aside from Beauty and the Beast, Beauty and the Beast was an absolutely magical experience for me. I mean, I was probably 5 years old when the original came out, which might date me, I'm about 30. So, yeah, I loved it so much.
Parker's getting a little teared up over here.
Well, I was at. I actually had that on my potential list. It didn't make my list, but it was on my potential list. I went, I screened it with, and I brought my 9-year-old daughter along, so that made the whole thing a lot more entertaining. Yeah. Because she was just, you know, in love with the movie. She still, you know, she walks out and she said that now was tied. She has like 5 favorite movies, you know, and she won't put them in any order. She goes, "That's one of my 5 favorite movies," you know, now right away off the bat. So, I did too. I liked it, although. I think Emma Watson possibly is an angel or a goddess of some sort. So any comment towards a derogatory towards, you know, possibly someone who's immortal. She's, you know, I love Emma Watson. I don't remember whether she can sing or not, but.
Oh yeah. No, I would let her beat me to death. Don't get me wrong. Like I would be crying tears of joy every punch that landed, but you know, she just can't sing her way. She just can't sing.
So yeah, that's probably true. So that would be a deal breaker for you. Like that would be your deal breaker with Emma Watson. If she kind of ran into her in a bar.
If she
wanted to sing karaoke, you'd say, you know, this just isn't going to work out.
I just put a bunch of cotton in my ears, I guess. I don't know. No, Emma Watson
But anyway, back giving these, I agree. Visually, it was really fun. It's one of those movies that will live on, and you know, like the Disney live action. That's something they're going to keep doing. I'm kind of looking forward to the Little Mermaid one, although they're doing I forget which one is next. But anyway, you know, with
Lion King is that?
Oh yeah, yeah, Lion King is next because I think they got you know, I hate
Hugh Jackman is going to be Scar, isn't he?
But I forget Timon and Pooh.
Yeah,
they got the two guys that are going to do that, and I'm drawing a blank as to who it is.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
Really funny.
They should
anyway,
just do Nathan Lane again, shouldn't they? I mean, Nathan Lane's still around. Let him reprise Timon, right?
Yeah, no, it's yes, I agree. I loved Nathan Lane, the voice of Timon. You know, you go back to last year's Jungle Book, which was brilliant, and I like it too. So it just wasn't quite on my list.
Okay. No, that's fine. Also, I will note that I didn't know they were making a Little Mermaid sequel, but this is a true story. When I was growing up, I had Little Mermaid like bed sheets. I loved The Little Mermaid. It was my favorite movie when I was growing up. So now that you've told me that, I am 100% in, and I'm sure I'm going to literally cry at the theater. So
that red flowing man, Ariel, was I'm sure. By the way, Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner.
Billy on the Street. Yeah, cool.
Billy on the Street, and then Seth Rogen as the other one. So that could work.
That's a pretty spot on casting right there.
All right, where are we?
I think that was Parker's two. I had Get Out as two, so okay. Mr. Z, it's on you now.
Okay, my two was War for the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh, nice.
Yep, and that's, again, one of those movies that I kept moving up my list. When I was making this list, I was like, well, it's going to make the list in five, and then I kept moving up because that was one of those movies that the farther away, you talked about that a little bit, that as days went by and I looked back on that film, the more farther I got away from it, I realized that was a brilliant movie. I mean, in so many different ways, it was visually really cool. I'll date myself. I grew up with kind of watching on TV, of course, but the original Planet of the Apes, that was a big deal when I was a kid, you know, and so all of a sudden watching this and kind of seeing them link together this one with the, what you might want to call the episode four, you know, of the Planet of the Apes world, where her name is Nova and their baby's name is Cornelius. But on top of that, that movie as a standalone film for kind of War and Woody Harrelson, who, you know, I thought was just going to be part of the army, just the bad guy army. And instead he's kind of a rogue army guy that, you know, and all this stuff. I couldn't love that movie more. So it's number two on my list.
That's awesome. That was probably my number six. I was fighting between that and Wonder Woman. And I just recently saw War for Planet of the Apes. And I couldn't agree with you more. It kind of had Woody Harrelson had a little bit of a Marlon Brando Apocalypse Now character going on, where he's living out, he's getting a little crazy, which, you know, in the previews that shows him, it looks like he's overacting in some of those previews.
Yes.
But when you see
when he does the so emotional line, you know, having seen that in the trailer, and then the thing you want is, I couldn't tell if that was overly done or if that was properly done. When he screams so emotional at the, you know, and it's like, I don't know if I like that or not, but I let it go.
Yeah, and it I think it worked fine in that scene as well.
Right. Because he is a little crazy.
Yeah, he's off his rocker a little bit. But I mean, the visuals are just insane with this movie. The orangutan Maurice, I could not tell at all that was a CGI.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you get to it's like Jungle Book last year, where you get to the point where you forget that you're watching CGI, and then that's when you know they've done something right.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie with apes riding horses, shooting guns, you know, loading up machine guns, and everything is completely believable. It's just insane. And
and emotional, like when, I mean, I don't want to do spoilers, but you know what, a scene when, I don't know, about a third through the movie in the cave there, there's some real, I mean, theoretically you could make the argument that Andy Serkis could somehow get a nomination.
And I think he should, absolutely.
Yeah, it would be the first virtual nomination, but it would be interesting. Because, again, there's emotion in the movie. It's not just an apes movie. I mean, you feel bad at points, and you feel mad at points, and you feel excited and hopeful, and so yeah, that's my number two.
I think that's an awesome one on the list. And I'll throw this question out to you, Mr. Z. Where does these three movies, so this trilogy, fit in trilogies just of all time? Is that, I mean, it's kind of gone under the radar, but I think it's one of my favorite trilogies of all time.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, what I'll say is that for me, when the first one came out after the Tim Burton, I was a big Tim Burton guy, and they had the Tim Burton remake and it didn't do well. So when they decided
Marky
to
Mark
it again, I thought, I don't know. I really didn't even really want to see it, to be honest. And it's one of those movies that I went to and I was like, well, that's pretty good. That first one was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And then you find out they're making a second one. I had the same thing. It's like, I don't know if I really want to even see this film. And then you go to it and you're like, that was really good. You know? And so it's a movie that, people kind of, I think it doesn't do as much business as some, because in their mind, they aren't really that excited to go see it until after they go. And then they're like, ah, I really liked that movie. And yeah. The third one, I thought, unlike some sequels, triquels, I thought the third one was the best of the three. So.
Yeah, I think it was right up there. Number two, I like quite a bit with the interplay between Caesar and Koba. I thought that was extraordinarily strong.
It was emotional as well. So, yeah. Now they are making a fourth one. I hope that's the last one.
I heard that at least the director of this one, Matt Reeves, does not want to redo the original Planet of the Apes.
No, because so there's not much left to link. And if the little girl Nova is the Nova in the original, well, the Nova in the original is about 28 years old. So that only gives you 26 years to get to the point where what's-his-face Charlton Heston lands on Earth 3,000 years from now.
26 movies is, I think, what you just said.
But anyway, get too deep into the fictional world of the Planet of the Apes. So.
Sorry, I haven't seen any of them. I'm a bum.
Yeah.
Greg lent me both of the discs. They're sitting at my house, and the other one's
theater. They're hard to watch because you don't think that they're going to be that good. So but it's one of those movies that if you watch, you go, wow, I actually like that.
Yeah, I finished building my PC this year, so I've been spending all of my spare time just playing like Civilization. So the time that I should be watching movies, I'm playing video games. What can I say?
I'm really glad to have you on a movie review podcast, Parker. You son of a bitch. God damn it.
I do that sometimes. I'm too old. You probably guys are too young to remember the RPG Earthbound.
I remember Earthbound.
Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Super Nintendo.
That was my
favorite
RPG of all time, and I found out in the Wii. It was on the Wii store here.
You can get it. I think I installed it and haven't played it. You can install it and play it on your 3DS. So I have a 3DS, and I just installed it, and I just haven't played it. But
I play it. So that's what I did for about 2 weeks instead of and shirked some of my duties. And I took my 12-year-old son, he likes RPGs. And I said, all right. And we just pranked Earthbound night after night until we won. So I've done that before. So.
No, that's awesome. That's, because I built a PC up from nothing, and they just had the Steam summer sale. And I got like 15 games for like $100. So
yeah,
yeah, way to go for sure.
For sure.
And I'm also a huge RPG fan. It's probably my number one genre as well. So
yeah, that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Are we ready for number ones?
Are we all on number ones? Okay.
I think so. Mine will be easy here again. Parker keeps stealing all my thunder. My number one is It Comes at Night.
Wow.
Yes. And this was kind of in the vein, Mr. Z, of what you brought up before you started your list. This was just the list of movies that kind of stuck with me that I enjoyed the most.
Sure, yeah, you love what you love. Yep.
Exactly. It was it blew me away. Basically, I can't wait to see this one again, and I have to go back and this is directed by Trey Edward Schultz. This is his second movie he's ever made, and the one he made before was Creesha. I haven't seen it yet, but now I'm going to have to go back and watch that one.
Right, right.
This guy clearly knows what he's doing and has an eye for film. I don't know what else we can say about it other than this is another one. Even if you're not, I had a lot of friends I invited to go see this and they wouldn't go do it because they saw the preview and it looked like a scary movie.
Right.
Even if you're scared of scary movies, go see this. It's not really a scary movie. It's more of a tense. It's a bottleneck film that just gets tighter and tighter. I think I described it during the review as kind of a mix of 10 Cloverfield Lane and The Road. That kind of mix. It's a very contained film, and it's one of the most competent films I've seen in recent memory. So
sure. Yeah,
go. Go see it. It deserves money. Go pay money.
Yeah, I'll just add one more thing. So I think I saw that, like, in the movies I saw before it and after it were, like, The Mummy before it and then, like, Transformers immediately after it or something like that. So
Right. It's
just, like, when you see a movie that's shot like this, you can really appreciate when a director is, like, this guy's choosing every single thing that ends up on that camera very carefully. And every decision he's making is very deliberate and the entire movie is interconnected. Then you go see Transformers where a robot
Hey, you might be wrecking my number one.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Okay. Sorry. The Mummy. Yeah, where a robot's pretty much ejaculating onto the screen for an entire movie.
And that would have been awesome.
that's the movie I want to see. Come on,
hey, you're overselling Transformers.
All right, am I on my number one?
Sure, I'm so yes.
Okay, I'm on my number one. I'm sorry to say this, but my number one is John Wick 2.
Whoa, no, it's not.
yes, it is. my number one movie of the year is John Wick 2, and obviously, as we've said, it's movies that we enjoy the most. That this is,
well, yeah.
I'm not making any argument that this thing is profound. but I love the action shots in this movie, and the fighting scenes in particular are done better or as well or better than any other movie that's ever been made. Well, John Wick and John Wick 2, the fighting scenes are insane. And I said this in the podcast when we reviewed it earlier this year, but Keanu Reeves is the most convincing moving fighter on a screen that I've ever seen. And I'm a martial arts fan. I watch the UFC. I've done like jiu-jitsu and stuff for years. And sure. He moves better on screen than George St. Pierre does as a fighter, which is insane. He moves convincingly, and the scenes are shot in way. There's really long scenes where they don't make cuts, and it's hard to do that type of a shot, but they do them consistently throughout the movie. And I have a soft spot in my heart for Keanu Reeves. I'm not going to lie.
Sure.
The first time I saw The Matrix, I was like probably like 12 years old, something like that. And I lost my goddamn mind.
Yeah, right.
So
I was saying when I was in college and I saw Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh yes.
Honestly still say that that's a great movie.
Oh no, it is.
It's one of our first time travel films. It was like, because here's like, after we go back, we got to remember to put the keys in the desk. And then they're like, what if we forget? And he goes, we didn't, because they're already there. it's like kind of like you're like, it's dumb, but you're also like, hey, that's kind of cool. But yes. Oh, as far as John Wick, I went in the first 8 minutes, that car where he goes to get his car, brilliant. I was just like, no wonder, this is great. I mean, and then, you know how they say, like, if you break down an NFL game, there's actually
there's
11 minutes of actual action. I kind of felt like that with John Wick, that if you broke down the actual, like what happened in the movie, you could probably get her done in about 12, 13 minutes.
I don't disagree with you that after that initial scene, it did drag, especially compared to the first movie.
Where
the first movie started off slower, but then it ramped up in intensity. And that's why I still don't like it as much as the first one. But
right.
Like I said, I
don't have any problems with that. I just was waiting for it. But yeah, that's cool.
Action is probably my favorite genre, and I think this has some of the best. I mean, it's, everything else aside, the actual action parts of this movie are as elite and top tier as anything that I can think of. I mean, the only thing that's coming close for me recently in terms of the actual action shots is Mad Max Fury Road, which is one of my top five movies ever, too. So
I like that.
Yeah.
And I always like to go back to the first Bourne Identity with Matt Damon. I kind of felt like was a really good movie that the car chase scenes worked in. The action scenes actually made sense in the first Bourne Identity for me. So what makes me nervous is that I'm now wondering if my number one is going to get laughed at.
Is going to get throttled?
Because no one has mentioned Spider-Man yet.
Oh, okay. Spider-Man was on my honorable mention list.
I have Spider-Man on there. Again, not from the aspect of, obviously we've been to the well so many times on Marvel films, but I just thought, honestly, the most fun I had at a movie this year was Spider-Man. I enjoyed the silliness of it. I certainly wouldn't defend it as a serious film, or I wouldn't kind of defend the physics of it, all of those things. But I really enjoyed the movie. I mean, for a superhero movie, which, like, I didn't care for the Avengers. I kind of like some of the other stuff. Doctor Strange wasn't not the biggest fan of, but you know, I really liked this reboot of Spider-Man, and that was my number one fun movie. Not saying that's the best movie of the year. It's not, you know, I would never sit there and argue with a film critic that whether Dunkirk was better than Spider-Man. I'm just saying that was the most fun 2 hours I had at the theater this year.
It was, yeah, I enjoyed Spider-Man quite a bit as well. I think they really, the Tom Holland as Spider-Man really actually felt like a high school kid, where we get a lot of these movies where it's like a 38-year-old man who's supposed to be a sophomore in high school, and it's just not believable whatsoever. And that the whole high school dynamic actually felt like a high school, which is, you know, that plays into the character of Spider-Man, because he is just this high school kid who's also fighting crime. I really liked too that they, having Spider-Man in the Marvel universe, I thought they played that really well, where this is a universe where the Avengers have fought giant space worms and these giant space aliens, and so a dude that just dresses like a spider and swings around is not that cool, and so he gets like heckled by people on the streets. And I thought that was pretty hilarious. Like, he's just everyone's like, oh, look, hey, there's that Spider-Man guy. Hey, do a flip for us. And like, he's like, this guy's a superhero. But, you know, to them, oh, you're not Thor. You're not a god. You're just some dude in tights.
Yeah.
And I thought
that was fun. I threw it up there that was mine so far this year.
I can't fault you for that too. I thought Michael Keaton was one of the best, Marvel villains.
Rain is a bad guy. What was it? I forget his name. Falcon?
Vulture, I think.
Vulture?
Yeah.
Vulture?
And
the fact that was, wow, oh, I better not say that. The little twisty thing was sweet.
That was awesome, yeah. And there's that scene, the scene in the car was just, oh, that was awesome.
Yep.
Perfect.
He walked in, that was awesome.
Yep. And just the fact that Michael Keaton, he is a relatable villain. He's not, you know, he's not a god from a different universe who wants to take over Earth.
Well,
he's
you kind of knew why he was doing what he was doing.
Right.
He had a reason to do what he was doing. It wasn't just, it wasn't just being evil for the, wasn't a bad guy just to be a bad guy. He had a reason for doing what he was doing.
So. Exactly. And so, yeah, I thought that was a really good movie as well.
Cool.
It's cool. Anything you guys are looking forward to the rest of the year? Anything that sticks out, Parker?
Well, I guess after this podcast, I'll have to see Dunkirk, Spider-Man, and The Planet of the Apes. So.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, well, obviously Star Wars. We didn't bring that up, but I'm really looking forward to Star Wars.
I would say
mine is to go with, obviously the big ones. I think we all want to see Justice League. Not that we don't know whether we're going to like it or not, but everyone is curious about Justice League.
It's
Jumanji. It's, who knows about that? Pitch Perfect 3. There's a couple movies coming out that, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe a little bit off, not off of your radar or anything, but Stephen King's It in October.
Yes, I'm really excited for that. That looks like it's going to be awesome.
Yep, that's kind of the one that the not quite as obvious one would be Stephen King's It for me.
Yes, that one, when that first trailer came out, I was sold instantly on It.
Yep.
And that reminds me, as far as Stephen King stuff goes, I'm also looking for The Dark Tower. Huge Idris Elba fan, and McConaughey's in there too, so I'll see that one. I'm looking forward to it.
Next, that's not this weekend, but next weekend.
I will say for The Dark Tower, I experienced my first experience of being trolled on Twitter over The Dark Tower posters that just got released.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was. Somebody tweeted them out, and they're these, I was the first person to respond, and I said, it's nice to see Ed Hardy still getting work. because they're these weird, you know, they look like the Ed Hardy shirts. And somebody instantly responded with whoever the artist name is, like Jai Lee. And he's just like, never disrespect Jai Lee's posters again. And at first, it was the first time it's ever happened. I was kind of like taken aback, but then I envisioned just like this really nerdy man just like getting so upset over my comment that I was like, oh, that's actually pretty damn hilarious. I think the movie I'm most looking forward to seeing this year, Blade Runner 2049.
I
think I was all in when they announced that it was Denis Villeneuve, or however you pronounce his name, the guy that did Arrival, Sicario, Prisoners, just based on him doing it. He's coming in. He's one of those directors that he's getting into that upper echelon. And I want to see kind of anything he does. So I think, and they got the baby goose, Ryan Gosling, in it.
Sweet.
So I think that's probably the top of my list of the remaining movies of 2017. But you never know. At the end of the year when we do the recap, I know there's maybe last year there's only like one movie in my early top five that made it to my final top ten. So that's kind of the fun of
there's two movies that I want to catch that have come out. One of them came and gone. Obviously The Big Sick. There's no reason in the world that I haven't seen that yet, and I have a feeling I really wanted to put it on there, but I just couldn't defend putting on Big Sick. But I really, from everyone I know that's involved, people who I trust, have, you know, said you're gonna love this film. So that, and then there's a movie called Colossal. Did any of you guys get to see Colossal?
That was Anne Hathaway, right?
Anne Hathaway, where they have that giant monster that's destroying Tokyo, and it turns out she's kind of controlling it accidentally.
It sounds like a really interesting.
It's really
premise.
Weird, you know, in that aspect. When I love kind of movies that are just so bizarre, like the Donnie Darko weird, you know, kind of stuff. Yep. That I want to see Colossal. So those are the two that I kind of feel like I missed that I want to catch.
Yeah, there's always so many. There was one that I saw that has popped up a lot is Raw, which is a horror movie. It's about a girl that gets like addicted to meat, eating meat, and she slowly turns towards like cannibalism. And
it's really gross from what I understand, right? Yeah.
That's what, but I've seen it pop up on like some people that I consider have, you know, similar taste with mine as far as just films, and I never thought that would pop up on those lists. And so I guess it's something I gotta add to my list to catch up on. And Okja, I haven't seen that. I saw that pop up quite a bit.
Oh, that's a Netflix movie, right?
Yeah, yep. Who is it? The guy that did Snowpiercer, the Korean director. The South Koreans are putting out a lot of good movies as of late, and so that's definitely one I gotta put on my list here soon.
My last one that I want to add is Kuso. That I want to see, and I don't know if you guys have heard much about it, but the director decided he wanted to make the most disgusting movie ever made, and it pretty much appears that he's done it from all the reviews and everything that I've seen. So I really want to see it just to be horrified, I guess.
Yeah, what's it called?
It's called Kuso, and it just came out as a streamer this week. I think we found you can stream it on iTunes, but. I on one podcast I actually read extended like descriptions of the scenes from the movie, but like it has some recognizable names in it, like Hannibal Buress is in it. Hannibal Buress, Tim Heidecker. It's kind of like a weird ensemble, like almost sketch routine, but every scene, like I was just reading descriptions of it and almost gagging. So I really want to see it because I'm interested in shit like that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's see. It received a large number of walkouts at Sundance and was deemed in an article written for The Verge to be the grossest movie ever made. That's something that I want to see.
Well, yeah, that's because if it's true, then that's that's great. Yeah. I agree. It's on my radar now. So
yeah, we might do that as an instant Scotch Stories. Usually, we try to pick older movies that are so terrible. But that might have to just go right into in the territory as Nine Lives was one of the instant ones that we did.
Sure. Or you can do a Scotch Stories on John Wick 2.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I apologize. That was a cheap shot that I don't mean, and I have no problem with anyone liking John Wick 2.
Hey, you gotta be careful.
Obviously, because it was like 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. Everyone seemed to like it but me. So
you gotta be careful. The John Wick universe, every single person is an assassin. Yeah. You never know. Everyone in New York City is part of the underground assassin community.
There's definitely more assassins than there are regular people.
Yeah, and it's very. I feel a lot better not stopping and giving homeless people money now that I know that they're assassins.
Oh yeah, they're fine.
They live
they're
like
fine.
This exquisite life, and yeah, you know.
That's the life they've chosen.
Exactly. Perfect. Yeah. all right. I think we.
Okay.
Yeah, we can wrap it up here. You can check us out. We have a website, blurredvisionreviews.com. We're on Twitter, Blurred Reviews. Look us up on iTunes. Mr. Z, where can people find you?
Yep, I am. I do my bit on Friday mornings on KFan, and I'm at Mr. Z Movies is my Twitter deal. And I usually respond if somebody has a question about box office or about upcoming movies. I usually try to respond to them and give them an answer if I can. So I'm if they have any questions, I can try to help out.
Perfect. And I'll end this with our typical bit that we do here. So after we saw The Great Wall, every week we request people to tweet us pictures of magnets. We want them to get their phone as close to magnets as possible. We love magnets now after that movie. And we also ask people to send us their addresses, and we'll send them Polaroids of ourselves. We haven't had any takers yet, which is really bizarre. but, you know, the offer still stands. If you send us your address, we'll send you a bunch of Polaroids of ourselves.
I think that's
a good early top five, and I can't wait to see what the rest of 2017 has to offer for us.
Yeah, for sure.
And thank you again, Mr. Z. Hopefully we can get you on here again.
Hey, thanks. It was fun. All right, yeah. Well, we'll keep in touch. And we'll chat again.
Absolutely. All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Take care.
Yep. Bye.